Healing vibes going out to Ira Kaufman, the sage of Tampa Bay sports. He's been fighting it, but you know what? We expect him back on the podcast next week. He's making his comeback, and we're thinking of you, buddy. And we got a great podcast for you and all Bucks fans. Enjoy. The Ira Kaufman podcast is presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford dealerships. And we've got the big guy, the GM, Sean Sullivan, the man who possesses the Ira Kaufman discount in his hand. He's here to tell us about what's happening at BillCurryFord.com. What's going on, Sean? What do we need to know?
If you visit Bill Curry Ford in the month of March, you're going to be entered in a drawing. That's all I want to reveal right now, but it'll be the biggest drawing in Bill Curry Ford's history. It's going to be very exciting, so you can follow us at all the social media accounts, especially TikTok. If you come into the dealership, buy a car, service the car, buy a part, go to our body shop, use our insurance company, do pickup or mobility, any of those things are going to enter you in a customer, you know, this secret customer thing that we're doing.
I got to say, Sean, you guys never do this kind of thing. So it's not like the dealership that mails you a thing.
This is true.
Every month with a special key. Or yeah. No, this is
not
the
a gimmick.
Real deal.
This is not a gimmick. Deal. This is a real deal. We're celebrating the new dealership. We're celebrating this past year of the Tampa community supporting Bill Curry Ford and a third generation family business. And that I'm honored to be the general manager of. The Curry family is an excellent family. They do a lot in the community and the community does a lot back. So we're very grateful for it. We had a huge successful 2024. We were voted, just so you know, a top 50 dealership in the United States. And if you guys don't understand how big a deal that is, just imagine tens of thousands of dealerships. Bill Curry Ford in Tampa, Florida was voted a top 50 store in the nation.
BillCurryFord.com. Curry's the family name. C-U-R-R-I-E. BillCurryFord.com. Buccaneers fans, the Ira Kaufman podcast is on. Another day two at the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeCamper of Joe Bucks Fan is here. We've got a special guest on the podcast, Lee, two of them. And, of course, the big name is General Manager Jason Light. And we're excited about that interview to bring that to fans. Good stuff we got here, but we got news, Lee. We got news, and I'm not talking about floods and damage. That would have you call Florida's Elite Restoration. That's always news because you got to call them first 24/7 whenever you have a disaster at your property. Florida's Elite Restoration.com. They'll come out to your property. Water damage is a killer. Ira is the water damage whisperer. Mold, you need a licensed mold remediation specialist, not just a mold guy. Storm damage, whatever it is. They'll come out with their great technology, the latest and greatest technology. They'll evaluate everything free. And if you need their services, they're the best in the business. Check out their 5-star Google reviews. Go to their website, floridaseliterestoration.com. They've helped so many homeowners. Every year it grows. And they're not only just in the Tampa Bay area. They're across the state. Owner Josh Martin, he and his team have 25-plus years on the other side of the business, on the insurance side. So if you get screwed by your insurance company, they're going to fight that corruption and know how to actually do it. Florida's Elite Restoration.com. Mention Joe Bucks Fan when you first call or Ira Kaufman, and you will get $500 back if you need their services. Florida's Elite Restoration.com. Lee, we got news at the combine. Jordan Whitehead axed. Cut him. He's released. He's done. $4.5 million savings on the salary cap. That news came down Wednesday afternoon. And this is big news. Tyke Smith, we already know, is wanting to play safety. Now it seems like the Bucks are going to be wanting him to play safety unless he's replaced or there's a big shakeup. Looks like Christian Izian has the leg up for nickel. But your thoughts on Whitehead getting axed?
Real quick before my thoughts. No, insurance companies do not equate corruption. I don't want to get sued.
Oh, of course they do.
No.
They're corrupt.
No, there are some shady ones out there.
Well, yeah, you can't get sued unless you name an actual company.
Well, okay, then. They're corrupt.
It's like saying carnivals are corrupt or landscape companies, you know?
Okay. All right, Jordan Whitehead. Not a shock. Let's be real here. The Bucks pass defense the last 2 years, granted Whitehead wasn't here 2 years ago, pass defense sucked. Out and out sucked. They had to do something. Now, you want to blame Winfield's injury all you want? Okay. The way the Bucks were talking, I think there was something other than Winfield's injury that was happening there. Whether he got down in the dumps and got depressed because he was injured, the way these guys talked about Winfield, it was almost like they were making excuses for him. So something's weird there. I'm a big Winfield fan. I sure hope it was just injuries. But they had to do something about that defense. We've already talked about, or maybe we will talk about, how it looks like Todd Bowles has had an epiphany that, you know, maybe I might need an edge rush. And Whitehead, you called it more than I did. You saw him loaf. I saw him loaf.
Oh, no, you were on the loaf. I'm not the Whitehead loafer guy. That's you.
Okay, well, I saw him loaf more. I'm not saying he was totally loafing, but I saw it too many times for my liking. At times he was good, but those times were few and far between. He got injured, and I still say this, and I've talked to some people with the Bucks, and nothing has dissuaded me from saying the following. If you gave some coaches truth serum, they have buyer's remorse to bring
him
back.
Well, not anymore. He's gone.
Yeah, not anymore. He's gone. So there's a shakeup. Now, will they draft a safety? Wouldn't shock me. You know, we've heard Bowles say, we've heard Light say that they're looking at four areas, one secondary. So it would not shock me if they draft another safety. It's very interesting that they were talking about Tyke Smith wants to play safety. Not quite 24 hours later, they got a safety opening.
Yeah, the Whitehead thing, look, you can't forget his car accident, which we don't know how that affected things. You know, he got.
Oh, that's right. It was like a Saturday practice,
well,
right?
Well, he missed the playoff game.
On his way to practice.
I don't know if it was broken neck, broken back. For all we know, he's in good shape now. We don't know. But the Bucks were not mentioning his injury prior to his release. That wasn't the chatter in depth that was related to Whitehead, like, oh, what a tragedy. It wasn't like JPP when he broke his neck in the car accident. Everybody was talking about it. Different players, but either way, he's gone. So potentially, Bowles seems to bring back everybody who ever played for him. So I don't rule out Whitehead.
Or coached with him.
Yeah, I don't see exactly. I don't see Whitehead necessarily never playing for the team again. We may see him again if there's an injury later in
third
the season.
Third time's a charm, is
who
what
knows?
You're saying?
I don't know. But Bowles says he wants ball hawks.
Yes.
We talked about that. So Whitehead, not a ball hawk. And Mike Edwards,
bingo.
This move, he is a ball hawk.
Yes.
He may not be a great safety,
no,
but he's versatile. He came back for a few games last year. Fans will remember he was on the Super Bowl team, third round pick in 2019, had a bunch of picks, was always a ball hawk, didn't start really, a little bit, played some nickel.
Pick six against the Packers, did he? Or was that Jamel Dean?
I was Dean.
In the regular season.
Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
You know, a high stepping home. You know, Dean's picks, you got to remember them because he doesn't have too many. So
they stick out.
But they do. But one thing that sticks out to me is if you have Antoine Winfield Jr., Tyke Smith at safety, and you've got Christian Isian at nickel, I don't know if it really matters, and I want to talk to a football person a little bit more about this, but that must be the shortest threesome in the middle of your defense in the back end in the league.
Probably.
Those guys are not big guys, none of them at all. So I don't know if that matters, but we know Todd Bowles likes long corners. He was actually asked here the other day with the local media, he was asked about cornerback and shorter corners, and he basically said of shorter corners, well, they better be able to jump. And we know how he's obsessed with these long corners. So I don't know if that matters, Lee.
All of a sudden, I didn't think this was going to happen. Now it may happen. I don't know if they're interested in a safety in the first round. But all of a sudden, it's Xavier Watts from Notre Dame pops up. Obviously, Notre Dame had a really good team, really good defense. Marcus Freeman, he's got a defensive background. He puts out a lot of talent in secondary. Corners, safeties. And they got a safety in Notre Dame, does Xavier Watts. Now, all of a sudden, he's on my radar. I kind of thought, you know, maybe it might be interesting for the Bucs. Well, they got starting safeties. Now they don't. This is starting to turn into a fascinating draft for the Bucs. I guess we got to talk about draft a little bit. I mean, my gosh, we're at the combine. The more I think about it, this Egbuka from Ohio State, who is an absolute Chris Godwin clone. Bucky Brooks thought he would be around at 19. And this guy, it's like God, with someone snapped the finger and made a second Chris Godwin. And that's what this guy is. Just like Godwin. He loves to block. He can play inside. He can play outside. He's got some speed to him. Very physical cat. I really like this guy. That makes sense because I think you and I spoke. We don't like the vibe that we're getting about Chris Godwin.
No, we talked about that on the last podcast as well. you know, we'll see. It's a day-to-day situation with the major injury and the timeline, the decision that the Bucks have to make March 12th, because another team could swoop in, sign Chris Godwin. He could still fail their physical, that other team.
Bingo. But then no hair off their back.
But then what do the Bucks do? You know, they may have tried to make a counter move. It's just dicey for the Bucks. But I go back to Baker Mayfield. If the Bucks are looking at a receiver, I don't think it would be first round, because I just get the feeling Mayfield doesn't want to break in a first-round receiver, and I don't know. I just have that feeling, and Light has had so much success with later-round receivers, Godwin being number one, but also he got contributions from guys like Scotty Miller, Jalen McMillan. I don't know. I feel like Light might be like, you know what, we can find that value in the second round on a receiver. I don't know.
It's possible. Oddly enough, you bring up Scotty Miller. You know how we like the bar hop in Indianapolis, because you never know who you're going to run in, and you never know what you're going to see. You pointed it out the other night. A certain NFL owner was sort of slobbering over a certain NFL media member, and I can't blame the guy either. I cannot blame the guy. So at any rate, same night, I was there too, obviously. I saw it. Who do I run into? A Scotty Miller college teammate. And he goes, "You cover the Bucks?" "Yeah." He goes, "Hey, do you know Scotty Miller?" I'm like, "Yeah, I know Scotty. I played college ball with him." And we got to talking. And the reason why I bring that up is I was telling this guy, I said, Scotty Miller had his best ball when he played for Bruce Arians, because Bruce Arians broke him of jumping for every pass. And the guy busts out laughing. He goes, "He did that in college, too."
Nice. Tyler Johnson, he contributed before he
had his best years with Arians.
You know, best year. Before he sort of fell off, but I'm just talking about the Bucks. I'd love to see the Bucks get a full throttle next Mike Evans kind of receiver. I think it would be awesome. But the best case scenario is Chris Godwin's healthy,
yes,
comes back here, and they keep building the way they want to build. Mm-hmm. And as we sit here, Lee, Wednesday, still no word from Levante David. And you know Levante David, he's not Mr. Social Media,
no.
Levante David, but he hears things, he gets texts, he sees who's moving around the league. And, you know, sometimes this time of year, when all the coaches are here and most of the coaches are here and the NFL general managers are here at the combine and there's all sorts of news going on, sometimes that stimulates a player like Levante David to be like, you know, I want to be a part of that. You know, this NFL's back. You know, I'm watching ESPN.
And my juice is flowing.
Flick on SportsCenter and, you know, things are going on, and NFL Network's got action again, but still no word yet from Levante David's camp, and I'm sure the Bucks will be the first people who would be eager to say, "Hey, Levante's coming back, this is really cool." That, in a tiny little way, disturbs me a little.
I don't know how to read that. I agree with you. I don't know how to read that, because Levante's hard
to read.
Yeah,
I don't know either, but it disturbs me.
Last year, when it was still wondering, okay, what's Levante going to do, he sort of announced it publicly when he put a video up on his Instagram stories, showed him working out. Well, you don't work out just for spits and giggles. I mean, working out is a sense of getting back in shape to play in the NFL, not like somebody going out there pumping weights because they want to impress a broad down the street. Should I say broad? I don't know, man. That's politically incorrect. How about street? Yeah, I can say street. A woman. There, no one will get offended by that.
So, also news of the combine today, which is exciting to us anyway, is
that free salad?
Free salad, is that Tennessee is going to let Harold Landry look for a trade.
Now, yes.
Harold Landry, you know, most of our fans in Tampa are not necessarily watching a ton of AFC South games, but this guy is a legitimate pass rusher, 31.5 sacks over the last 3 years.
28.
He's a consistent guy. He was with Vrabel's Titans, and the Bucks have seen him up close in joint practices, mm-hmm, as well as in preseason, etc. But bottom line is, good player. Now, he is set to earn $17.5 million this year, which is very reasonable for a quality edge rusher. He's also under contract for next year at $17.5 million. Seems to be in his prime. This seems like a wonderful guy to throw a third-round pick for.
Yes.
You know, it just feels like
yes.
That.
Oh, by the way, how'd they get JPP?
Third-round pick.
There you go. When I saw this, I was in my hotel room, half asleep. I was getting ready to come over here. I saw this. All of a sudden, I'm wide awake, like I had 3 cups of coffee. I started banging on the key top. I was fired up. I was stoked. I like Harold Landry coming out of Boston College. You go into archives, jewelbucksfan.com, I guarantee you're going to find stories about me pimping Harold Landry. Why do I like him so much? He played for a crappy team, and he produced. In Tennessee, for the most part, he played with a crappy team. He produced. Imagine putting him on a good team. Now, yes, he played with Jeffrey Simmons, who's an excellent player. But imagine him putting him on a team with Lavonte David, with Kancey, with Vita Vea, with Yaya on the other side, with Lavonte David behind him, with Antoine Winfield behind him. Imagine surrounding him with good talent, what he could do.
Well, hopefully we don't have to imagine. And, of course, edge rush, pass rush is something we talked to Jason Lyon about. So without further ado, well, you know what? There will be further ado.
What ado? It drives me nuts. Ado. Define ado for me.
It's French.
Without further delay.
BillCurryFord.com. Start shopping for a vehicle there right now. And remember our friends at Florida's Elite Restoration, FloridasElitereStoration.com. They make this podcast possible. Here's Jason Light. All right, Jason Light, the Buccaneers Ring of Honor General Manager, is back on the Ira Kaufman Podcast. What could be more fun? Thanks for being here, Jason. Appreciate you.
Thanks for having me.
Surviving the car wash.
Is this the hot wax?
Well, if we wouldn't have done that, we'd have got a cooler beer in here.
Are you drying me off here?
It's the dry. Okay, this is the dry.
Right. Well, look, you got your muscle here. You got your cameraman filming this. Like you're a big shot.
It's all about content. You know that.
So, Jason, look, I think there are a few big themes with the fans, and one of them is this an all-in season, right? We remember 2021 when it was like, yeah, we're running it back. We're all in. We're getting all these guys back. Whatever we got to do, it's now. Is this one of those years where you feel the team is ready and you got to do what you got to do to win now?
I definitely think we're close. And I think we've got a real competitive team and we can be knocking on the door. I think you just got to be careful when you're just say all in. I mean, yeah, we're trying to win the whole thing, but we're trying to win the whole thing for several years down the road too. So we want to be a very good team for a long time. So there's give and take with that. So if there's an opportunity that makes sense, we're going to talk about it. Otherwise, we're going to continue to build the team and focus primarily on the draft and bring in a bunch of players that hopefully we can keep having good drafts like my staff has provided for us in the past.
I've been pretty vocal of late that I think you might be one or two players away from making a legitimate Super Bowl run. I think your team's that talented. And knowing that, and you just talked about it, how frustrating was that Washington loss? Because you probably would have played Philadelphia the following week. You have good luck against Philadelphia. You pounded Philadelphia early in the season. I mean, a playoff loss is ugly, but that in particular, knowing the type of team you have and the success you've had against Philly, does that take a few weeks to get over?
Anytime you, in my career, whatever position I'm in, it's the end of the year sucks. You have a pit in your stomach, I do at least, for a good solid month. And unless you win the whole thing, and even if you go to the Super Bowl and lose, it's the same pit. It's the same feeling that you're just dejected and borderline depressed over for a period of time. So that was no different this year. But, and trust me, I don't know if we would have beaten the Eagles. Mm-hmm. We have had some success, some 7-1 versus them since they hired me. But who's counting? And so it was because I felt like we had a better team this year than we did last year, but we didn't make it as far as we did last year.
Wow, so you thought the end product going into the playoffs was a better club, even with the injuries and everything, than last year?
I felt that way. I felt like the offense was humming. I felt like we had a better offense. I felt like we did have some injuries, but we were overcoming them a little bit. I tell Todd all the time, when there's a lot of injuries and there's a lot of what are we going to do, uncertainty because of a rash of injuries, especially at one or two positions, he always seems to come up with a really good plan. And I felt like we could have had a chance to do some damage.
Mentioning Todd, the fans are pretty hard on him. And it's not just at JoeBucksFan.com. You hear it on the radio. You see it around town kind of thing. I'm not saying everybody hates him, but why do you think that is, or what do you think the fans need to maybe better understand and have more confidence in the head coach?
Todd, I mean, he's won 3 division titles in a row. I mean, as the head coach, we've won 4 in a row, but he's won 3. We've been competitive, and we need to get some more players in depth in certain spots. It's just the cycle we're in that we had to focus last year on offense, and then so it's not. Not everything is you can put it on the coach. And, I mean, you guys talk about the lost decade all the time. I mean, We've been going to the playoffs for five straight years now, and Todd's been here the whole time, but he's been the head coach for three of those years. So you, like, I mean, do the fans, I mean, I guess there's expectation now to win the Super Bowl every year, but I think Todd's been doing a great job steadying the ship and pulling us out of some ruts both years and keeping the faith and keeping guys positive, and we've done some great things.
Yeah, I mean, the team is good. I mean, no one's – I mean, but a lot of people – I don't know. But I'm glad you answered that because I think it's important. You know, the head coach is a big part of the puzzle. They got to understand what's really going on.
Yeah, and you never know what you're going to get with a head coach. And we know what we have with Todd, and we're going to do whatever we can to help improve the team for him. So,
as GM, I'm guessing you prefer to have the fans with high expectations.
Sure.
Because the alternative is the lost decade. That's not fun.
No. No. Yeah, they should have high – expectations. I'm not at all shying away from that. You know,
you mentioned something in a little sidebar you had after the podium about Todd. Wouldn't you, if you could repeat it here, where you said, hey, I remember Andy Reid also got, you know, a lot of fans, they're irked, they don't like his clock management, and I think that's a whole lot more complicated than just watching a clock or whatever. But you said, hey, Andy Reid had the same critiques, and look where he is now.
I know fans, Philly fans are really passionate, and they were calling for his head at and thinking that they needed a change those years. And even though we were winning and going to the playoffs and went to the Super Bowl, you know, over time he made some adjustments and dove into it and did some things to improve himself on those. And I know Todd has talked about that. So he's willing to improve himself in any area. So it's just something that he'll continue to work on, but I have all the faith in the world that we're going to improve.
I may be going off the reservation here a little bit with the following, but when people are piling on about clock management, quote unquote, I'm kind of hesitant to do that, even though maybe I don't care who the coach is. If you're watching on TV or watching at the game, wait, why don't you call a timeout here? Why don't you call a timeout there? Now, I saw one of these Barstool videos where Gruden was on, Chucky. And he said something I never thought of before. And if he did this today without explaining himself, he'd be getting killed. He said he learned this from Warren Sapp. That Sapp asked, will you give me the responsibility to call a timeout on defense? He goes, well, why? He said, well, if it's under 2 minutes and we're on defense, we're trying to get after the quarterback, it sucks energy out of us. We need to take a break. Otherwise, the guy's going to tear us up. Do I have the responsibility to call a timeout? And he said he'd never heard of that before. He goes, yes, you do. And I never heard that before. But if a regular fan, like, what the hell are you doing calling a timeout? Right. So I think, quote-unquote, clock management is a hell of a lot more complicated than we give it credit for.
Yeah, well, it's more complicated, but it's also, yeah, it's easy for people to second-guess. And
yeah,
in the moment, there's a lot going on a headset. There's a lot of decisions that are being made, and there's a lot of reasons for doing things. So sometimes there's the things that people don't see and can't hear is a reason for calling a timeout. Mm-hmm. So it's always hard for a coach to – he can't come out sometimes and defend himself fully because he doesn't want to throw people under the bus. You know, it's just the same with anything. So
Or tip his hat,
yeah.
Jason, the national pundits, you know, when they pick out team needs, you know, they're all dialing in on edge rusher. We did a poll, and I was shocked that 60% of the fans said that edge rusher is the biggest need in free agency, but that was, they put Chris Godwin at 30%, and Levante David was like at 12%, even being disrespected kind of by Bucks fans who always say he doesn't get enough respect. Where do you stand on the edge rusher situation with the team, and how do you feel about that?
Always looking for edge rusher, despite what you guys say. I think it's Lee that thinks that we don't value edge rushers. It's not the case at all. Otherwise, we wouldn't have traded for JPP and we wouldn't have paid Shaq. And
you're right.
So we're always looking. It's not always as easy as you think. you've got to, there for every one that makes it, there's three that don't. And you want to make sure you're getting the right one. And throwing money, huge money, isn't always the answer. Can hurt you in other ways. People talk about wanting a certain player that we should trade the farm for, and it's going to be the answer, but why wasn't he the answer for the team that he was on, you know? So, you know, you got to add, I'm not talking about one particular player.
Sure.
So, but we're always looking for it. I will say that I am excited about Yaya. I think Yaya quietly was one of the better edge players in terms of his pressures and hurries. And I know that you don't like to hear that. You want to hear sack production. But I think he was just almost there, and he's going to get there next year. I'm really excited about Braswell for his second year. I think he's going to shock a lot of people, just knowing the kind of person he is and the talent that he has. And we'll look in all avenues for address. We do need some depth there. We do need some help.
Full disclosure, I'm the one that's always beating the table about the edge rusher, but you're right. I overstated it a couple of months ago when you don't value edge rushers. We talked about that, I apologize. I was overstating it, to be polite. But you explained this, and I thought it was a great explanation about you think your team easily can have a run this year. But you really have to balance, like, okay, do I want to pull the trigger now on a guy and handcuff myself 3 years in a row because you think you have a core nucleus that could be competitive for a long time? You don't want to endanger that.
Correct. So I think with the way our team is, the way my staff, and this, I'm not patting in any way, shape, or form myself on the my staff, what we have done, the coaches have done developing these players, and the great drafts that we've had, we are set up for a while. If we continue to keep doing that, we have to knock it out of the park again this year. And if you do something that you give away the farmer, do a Mike Ditka trade, or or do something like that, and then pay enormous guarantees, you better win. Because if you don't, then you've stopped the growth of your football team. So I'm not saying we wouldn't, but I'm just saying I like the idea of continuing to hit some doubles and triples and great drafts and continuing this ascent. While you're ascending, you could still think that you have a chance to win the thing.
So about the drafts, I'm going to ask you to put a number on it. You don't have to throw any other teams under the bus, but you guys got four real impact rookies last year. Maybe even would have been more if other guys played more. Where do you think your class ranked in the league last year?
Oh, jeez, I don't want to do this.
Oh, self-evaluate.
I don't want to do this.
You're not throwing any other team under
the bus?
No. Top five?
Sure. Yeah, I do.
That's fair.
Right. Yeah.
A minus?
Give me A. A to my staff.
Someone at NFL.com said A minus, and okay. You were like fourth best.
Top five draft class.
All props to my scouts.
Are you concerned? Scared is not the right word. Concerned that, you know, you obviously, Spytek knows what he's doing. Otherwise, he wouldn't be where he is right now. Are you concerned you're going to feel that loss in the next draft?
You know what? We've been preparing for him to get an opportunity for long enough that the – I know that the guys, now certainly he's very talented, he'll be missed, but the guys know what he did and have been preparing for this, and I feel very, very confident in them.
You're saying you got depth.
We have depth.
You realize, though, if for some reason they have the best draft, the Raiders have the best draft in the league, and you don't, the fans will be like, oh, he lost Spytek, get rid of Jason Light. That's that's just fans.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. It's fun. But sticking with the draft, I've asked you this before in different ways, but it changes every year. When you're here doing these interviews with these guys, is money a bigger factor? Are you saying, hey, you already banked $500,000. What'd you do with the money first? Like, is money to try to understand who the player is, the NIL money, is that a factor in your evaluation?
Not as big as you think. In some ways, they know how to manage their money better now than after they get drafted. Without naming the player, I was talking to one of our rookies and said, how much you make last year? He's, oh, I made $1.5 million. And I was like, what? Like, I remember $100 was like, went a long way in college. I would have killed for 50, you know, for a weekend.
I remember reading Bucky Irving made $1 million as a senior.
Yeah.
Wow.
So they, and it hasn't affected him. So,
no.
And these guys, I think overall we're seeing, well, maybe it's because we're just doing a good job of drafting the mature types, but I haven't seen a lot of money issues with players like I used to. I think their mothers are very good at teaching them, their fathers, you know, they get the NIL agents early in college now, so they have some support, and they teach them about investing and the value of a dollar. So I think it's getting a little bit better.
That's really interesting. I never would have thought of that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll go ahead. You can't say a name. I'll say a name. I had read that, what's his face, Miami quarterback Beck has turned a lot of teams off because, I guess, you know, hey, I got $1 million. Let's go get a Lambo. Let's go buy a Mercedes. And that has turned some teams off because of that. But maybe he's going to be smarter as a result.
Maybe, yeah.
Hey, Bucky Irving, did you see the video of him on Buccaneers.com coaching?
I did.
You know, I was really moved by that because just the passion that he had for it, and it all felt very real. And His love for the game. Like, you don't, if you don't love the game, you don't behave like that.
Yeah.
And can you speak to what you saw in him, not on the film at Oregon, that made you think he was that, you know, that Levante David kind of clone, and why you think he's not going to be a guy who takes a step back? Because we've seen, you mentioned the lost decade, LeGarrette Blount, Doug Martin, not have the second years that they had after their great rookie seasons.
Yeah, you can never predict the future, but I just know that what we know of Bucky, he's wired to always, he loves the game, to compete and to be the best he can, and to he's a great teammate. I don't, money is not affecting him. I just from what I know about him, he's had a really rough life in terms of how he grew up and where he grew up, but he had a solid foundation of his parents, his mother. He's lost loved ones, murdered, and he just kept the same mindset. You know, obviously, he lost, you know, brother, and it hurt him, but he's been able to recover and still keep the same mindset. He's an awesome guy, and we talked about it early in the year when, you know, you saw him and Tom Moore having a great relationship, and he's carrying Tom Moore's bag up the steps to the plane, and
wow,
they meet every morning, and, you know, for a few minutes, and Tom Moore gives him some wisdom, and he listens to him. I mean, you had to have been raised right to, you know, be that kind of kid. I mean, wow, he's just a special kid.
How much, you know, Steve brought up NIL, but his question was more of the focus of money. But to get NIL money, you got to stay in school. You can't declare for the draft. And I know an element of you know, an element of research in the draft is snaps, you know, wear and tear on the body. Do you prefer guys that stayed in school and developed more with another year in college? Is that more beneficial, or does it really depend on the player?
It just depends on the player.
Okay.
They're getting less snaps now, even as seniors now, because of the transfer portal, players are freshmen are coming in, and the school doesn't want the freshmen to leave, so freshmen and sophomores to leave, so they play them, mm-hmm, and they have to alternate now with the seniors and the juniors that are coming out in the draft. So not to tick them off, because they don't want to lose the younger player. So we're finding that a lot of these schools, the younger players are the ones that are getting all the money. The senior isn't getting very much because they know he's not going to leave.
Right.
So they pay the freshman, who may be third string, $1 million. I'm just using that, you know,
sure,
arbitrarily. But
and I then need to play college football.
And then the senior's making $50,000, you know, so that's starting. But these guys, you're seeing a lot of rotation. You see it at Florida. You see it at all the schools.
Wow.
Well, I got a last one from me. Josh Grizzard, new play caller, 34 years old, hasn't done it before. He's been in your building. I just talked to Mike McDaniel, said he's a slam dunk for this job, and he went into some of the background. I even talked to Liam Cohen. I don't know if I'm allowed to mention his name.
Of course.
It's not too soon.
No, it's
well, we
fine.
We see all these unsourced.
Time heals.
We saw all these unsourced reports that you were furious. You know, I don't know if what's real or not. It's the media. You know?
Throwing vases up against the wall. And
yeah. But they say that he is so ready, and he is that guy. Forget about the continuity, which you wanted. Why is Josh Grizzard going to be a great coordinator?
He's confident. He's very creative. He's very, very smart without coming across as I know more than you. He's very collaborative. He's got a lot of humility to him too, which is also a good quality. But he's very calm, and he's great in front of the room. And I just know he's going to – the players were – Baker and the players were so excited when after we lost Liam, you know, of course, got some anxiety or, you know, some angst. You're losing your coordinator again. But then when Grizz was named the coordinator, they were just elated.
Can you explain what the offensive line did you did for us on the sidebar?
Well, I just got a FaceTime from Baker when Grizz was hired, and they were all in the background. They were in the Bahamas and, you know, applauding the hire and saying how excited they were.
All right, well, Jason, your time on the Ira Kaufman podcast is up. I hope you're not too sad. You have any questions for us? We're here all day, but I know you got other things to do.
I'm going to flip the tables here someday and interview you guys.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
That'd be awesome.
That'd
be
great. We'll set that up sometime. Yeah, I have to do a little research and read some of your posts, and then
slam us.
Well, I didn't say slam. I just question you.
Like, yeah. We have to.
What were you thinking when you wrote this? You know, something like that.
I think it would be fascinating.
Okay,
really
we'll do it.
All right. That's Jason.
I'm going to do a Joe Bucks fan poll. Like, how rate your confidence in Joe Bucks fan? I'm going to have to do it on a different
on
platform.
On BucketHeers.com or Twitter.
Yeah, you'd have to find. You could do a Twitter poll.
I'll do a Twitter poll.
Okay. Oh, that would be fantastic. All right, Jason. All right,
appreciate you guys.
Good luck this
thank
season.
You.
Good luck this season. Some telling stuff there, and you know what? I'll throw it to you guys. And when I say guys, that means I'm introducing our other draft guru here, the only draft guru we know, JoeBucksFan.com draft guru Sean Sullivan, who's here at the Combine patrolling the halls, looking at scouts, looking at prospects, doing his thing. And we'll talk more about that in a future podcast. But Sean, welcome to the Ira Kaufman podcast, your first road trip with us.
It is my first road trip, and I'm excited. I've now met every security person at the place, so that's always that's a wonderful event there. When they asked me to stay, please step away from the prospects, Mr. Sullivan. That's a really fun thing, but I'm having a great time, Steve. Thank you.
All right, so what stood out there, Lee? What stood out there to you from Jason Light? What smacked you in the face?
I wish I could learn how to talk. You asked, I answered. I wish I learned how to talk. I'm running and I'm stuttering and I can't enunciate.
You talk just fine. What are you talking about?
That slaps me in the face. Other than that, I thought just some really interesting insight from Light about college players. Now, just a little bit ago, I saw John Lynch speak. He pretty much said the same thing, in that Light has found that within the age of NIL, you know, a lot of times researching players, one of the elements is, how's this kid going to react when he goes from having no money to millions of dollars in his lap? Some guys can't handle it, and they go bananas, and then they, you know, peter out in the league. Well, Light has found his research. These guys are now used to money when they're coming in the league, and that's less of an issue about, you know, how these guys are going to handle money. And Lynch said the same thing. Lynch said, he goes, these guys got millions of dollars, and they pretty much know what to do with the money now.
Yeah, it makes sense. You know, if you're going to go crazy and not handle the money, you'll do that after your sophomore year in college when you've got $433,000 in the bank, and you're like, oh, what should I do this summer? That's probably when you'll get in trouble, but it's all changed so much.
Lynch also said, he goes, you know, hey, what a deal. You're getting paid to stay in college. From what I remember, college is pretty damn fun.
Yeah, it was a good point by John. You know, like when he's talking about the economic development of the prospects, you know, that is such a minor concern to me, but I know it's a major concern to a general manager. My concern is staying and still getting more snaps, creating better prospects, and is it going to create a better NFL? And Jason Light, that's what, Lee, you and I were on the same page, but Jason Light said, actually, they're getting less snaps because of NIL, because they're having to play freshmen that they typically wouldn't have to play, so they don't get into the transfer portal. So that maybe we need to be looking at some rules. Maybe freshmen and sophomores shouldn't be able to jump around as much as, say, juniors and seniors. But
yeah, the seniors, they know they won't leave.
Yes, they know they won't leave.
But the freshmen are scared of, so they give them playing time.
But, and I really thought he was going to say, economically, they're better developed, and because they're getting more snaps, they're better developed coming in the NFL. But it was actually not what I expected him to say. And when he said that they're actually getting less snaps, and he feels like it's actually a detriment.
Yeah, because you got to play the freshmen. Otherwise, right, they're going to go. It's all new. They're all navigating it. And you've got the whole COVID thing that's still fleshing out, where you've got 24-year-old seniors where you didn't have that before. Look at Mike Evans, came into the NFL at 20.
That's a good point. You know, Nick Saban did an amazing interview about Chris Braswell, last year's second-round draft pick out of Alabama. And obviously, I do a lot of research on especially our draft picks, but all draft picks. And one of the things he said was he was a 5-star recruit, but he was still a situational pass rusher as a senior. And you're thinking to yourself, why is this guy, you know, who stayed, didn't transfer, got all the snaps, why is he situational? And I'm thinking to myself, now I realize these colleges are putting other players in rotation, younger players, while they're still trying to play the seniors and get them snaps as a prospect. I guess I never really considered that aspect of the NFL draft, is that now the college coaches are really dictating a guy that should be a starter. Possibly, I shouldn't be calling him a situational pass rusher anymore, because he probably should have been on the field for all the snaps. But because of how the NIL deal is situated, Chris now has to be as part of like a pass rushing package on third down.
More rotation, more bodies, more snaps. It's crazy. Now, I thought Jason Light's defense of Todd Bowles was
very
extremely
good.
Strong and detailed, where when he talked about, hey, you know, Bowles, every time something goes wrong with, hey, we just lost these three guys and this is an issue, we got a personnel problems for this game, he finds a way to adjust extremely well. That doesn't mean the Bucks win every game, and I can't give Jason Light the point when he said, well, Todd's pulled us out of a lot of tough spots, you know, mid-season.
Out of a rut.
Yeah, out of a rut.
Why did he get there?
He got there himself, but very passionate defense of Todd Bowles.
When Jason Light said, Todd's gotten us out of ruts 2 years in a row. And me, first thing I thought of was, why did he get in that rut? But Light's got a point. He got him out of the rut. Other coaches wouldn't have been able to do that. Bowles has been able to do it. Now the question is, why are you getting there? I thought his defense of Bowles was very strong. I got the impression of, we were talking about, you know, fans' reaction to Bowles and why they're always down on him. And, you know, Light was like, outside of winning the Super Bowl, what do you want the guy to do? He wins every year. He gets in the playoffs every year. He wins more games every year. What do we got to do? And obviously winning the Super Bowl, everybody wants that. But what do you think about that, Sean, where Light was like saying, the guy's doing a good job.
I'm not surprised at the political nature of Jason Light's answer when it comes to his head coach. That's perfectly normal to me. I'm fine with his defense. He wasn't aggressively defending it. He was just saying, hey, listen, we had a 14-year stretch where we didn't go to the playoffs, and Todd Bowles has been part of five straight playoff teams. That was a good point.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good debate. That if you're debating, that's a good point. I think what I got out of it that was most shocking was Jason Light saying that he is interested in an outside pass rush, contrary to what we've talked about. And then he brought up Jason Pierre-Paul and he brought up Shaq Barrett, which I'm not a math whiz, but that wasn't recent, right?
Yeah.
That wasn't in the recent playoff runs. And then Todd Bowles, when you did this, by the way, it was an amazing interview with Todd Bowles as well. When he came out and he said,
that was actually last podcast. You can find that at Apple Podcasts, Podbean, at JoeBucksFan.com. We had Todd Bowles on right here. Appreciate the shout out there, Sean.
I think it might be the most relaxed that I've ever seen Todd Bowles in an interview where he actually was very revealing. So if you didn't listen to that podcast and you're a football fan, you're missing out. What Todd Bowles did say was, I do want an outside linebacker that can rush the passer. I don't necessarily want to bring them back into coverage to play the run. And he was talking about how he had some safety and some corner issues. That aside, the fact that Todd Bowles is saying that he wants an outside linebacker that can rush the passer and he wants to only rush four, he was very clear on the interview of that. And then Jason Light, when you interviewed him, said exactly the same thing. We're actively shopping for a four-down, you know, pass rusher, not necessarily a run-first guy, but a quarterback-rushing guy. It was a complete contrarian opinion than what we've been getting in the past when Todd Bowles says, I don't necessarily need an outside pass rush.
Yeah, that was the line last year of, hey, if I get this big edge rusher, you know, it's got to raise my sack total, which was Bowles was saying, because they always have a good sack total. And Lee, you know, wrote many times about Casey Rogers saying, you know, it's okay, we don't care about the edge rush. It's really not that important to us from the standpoint of it's not ruining our defense. And now the offseason's here and it's like a complete reversal.
He started that. It might have been his, you know, after the season press conference. Might have been then, maybe it was a week before, but right around the end of the season, Jenna Lane asked him about, you know, have your views changed over the season by any element of your team? And he kind of like, well, I'm starting to think a little different about edge rush. Opening up his soul kind of thing, like speaking out loud. Stream of consciousness. It was almost like, yeah, I'm kind of looking again at edge rush. So maybe he started to have an epiphany. Maybe he read Joe Buck's fan enough to see that. I don't know. And thank goodness he's seeing the big picture.
Well, I think with Whitehead being released today, you're going to move Tyke Smith to a full-time, I believe, safety position.
Most likely,
they're probably going to move Izzy into that slot and get the players that he wants on the field, and he's going to probably then now be able to focus on that pass rush. And if you look at their last three pass rushers, I think Jason Light was very clear that he wants to add a pass rusher. He just wants to add the right one.
Yeah.
So if Joe Tryon, Logan Hall, and Chris Braswell haven't really set the world on fire, I mean, I think we all agree on that. We're not writing them off, but I think we can agree as a whole that they're not, you know, George Karloftis or...
You going to give us a Karloftis rant?
No, I'm not getting into it. But he said, I want to be very studious about how I go about getting a pass rusher, and I don't want to overpay for a pass rusher. Mm-hmm. He obviously doesn't want to give up draft capital, which I'm with. I just did the... If you listened for the best in class, I just did the top five draft classes, and the Rams hit on four middle-round guys that actually started and played huge minutes for a playoff team. So those are not throwaway picks like we used to say. Those are very important picks for building a team, and Jason Light even said, one more draft like I had last year, and this team is set up. But I have a little nugget for Joe Bucks fan listeners. There's a gentleman named Malcolm Kuntz who backs up Max Crosby for the Raiders. He's a free agent, 26 years old. He got hurt three games into last season. He had 8 sacks in a very short period of time. So he projected as a double-digit sacker. So if this might be a guy, you know, that's like one of those Shaq Barrett guys that was a backup and then he comes in and stars. But I think that that's what Jason Light's going to do. He's going to be looking for those kind of guys in free agency.
Sounds like a guy that John Spytek would never let out of the building. That's what it sounds like over in Vegas. But yeah, I don't want to sound naive here on the podcast. We all know every defensive coordinator in the league wants a 4-man rush because that's what makes it easy, and doesn't mean they won't blitz, but defense gets a lot easier when you can just let those guys loose. But Bowles clearly has changed his emphasis.
Yeah. Since you brought Bowles up in his apparent epiphany about edge rushers, do you find it interesting that he basically came out and confessed that I had edge rushers dropping back into coverage because we had so many injuries at safety? It was almost like saying, I didn't want to do that, but I had to help the guys out.
Look, there obviously was a reason. It just wasn't working. He's been very candid here at the Combine.
Yeah, he has been very candid.
Especially about his defense, which is his baby.
I thought that was very candid of him. I don't know who hated that more, me or fans, dropping these guys back in pass coverage. I still think that screws these guys' heads. Bucks bringing these young guys, like a Braswell.
Well, Yaya Diaby has shown promise as an edge rusher. I don't think he's gotten the sack totals that we've all talked about.
Sure.
He's gotten some pressures, but he's a physical presence, can play the run, mm-hmm. got tackles for loss. I think Jason Light mentioned in the interview that he's going to continue to develop him. He thinks he's going to develop into a full-time rusher. You know?
Yeah, look, he mentioned Yaya. Todd Bowles talked
15
about
sacks.
Yaya could be a 15-sack guy. You know, it's great, and he's physical, but you got to do it, man.
Yeah.
It's wacky. I remember years ago when Greg Schiano came out and said, Daquan Bowers, he's a double-digit sack guy.
Now, he benched him.
But that's what separates these guys is finishing those pressures. You know what I mean?
Was this before or after Daquan Bowers showed up the training camp out of shape and it was sucking air on the sidelines?
And he made him play practice.
That's actually not my favorite antidote about a pass rusher. We actually signed a pass rusher off the street like 3 weeks before training camp, and then the coaching staff actually had a press conference and said, we're really counting on this guy to contribute as a double-digit sacker off the edge. Do you remember his name?
Would that be the immortal Garrick Landry?
Yes. But I'd like to get back to what Jason Light was talking about and then back to the Todd Bowles interview, which I think it all ties together. Is this whole thing about having someone in his ear during the game to help him do timeouts properly and to help him do game management, and they're looking for a full-time game manager? That story was published on Joe Bucks Fan. I personally want all of that to end. I want them to take the communication off. I don't want anybody in Todd Bowles' ear. I feel like the reason why I get so mad at Todd Bowles is because I feel like he misses momentum in the football games. Like the opportunity against the Redskins with 4 minutes left to kick a field goal, and I'm going to go back to this. I know Ira disagrees with me, but at what point did you think we were going to stop? We hadn't even had them punt one time in the game. So what made you think at the end of the game, when the game's on the line, all of a sudden we don't have a closer, so all of a sudden we're going to stop them? No, they marched right down and won the game. And I don't know if that was somebody in Todd Bowles' ear going, statistically, you got to kick the field goal here. You have a better chance of winning statistically. I don't care about statistics. I want the guy on the field that feels the momentum, that feels what's going on, that looks at Baker Mayfield and sees the hunger in his eyes to win this game and put the ball in Baker's hands and say, go win the game, man, on 4th-and-4.
Well, Sean, that's kind of a discussion for another day. I know that ties together, but across the NFL, it is changing a lot. Who's in somebody's ear. I had mentioned to Todd that 7 or 8 teams are having a lot of success now with a full-time game manager guy. So
and you discussed it with Jason Light. He had his opinion as well about about managing the game in the game. And he said there's a lot of people in Todd's ears. And we, as fans, we get mad when a timeout's called because we don't know. He might not have heard something from the headset. I'm saying throw the headset in the garbage is what I'm saying.
I thought it was interesting that Light even went there talking about improving clock management. You know, and he had his Andy Reid comment again, which clearly was something that he planned, I think, before the combine.
He's ready for it.
I'm going to throw Andy Reid out there as a guy who, hey, people busted on his clock management for years. So,
well, I said this to Light on the podcast, and I'll say it again. I think it's
way more complicated than we give it credit for. I really do. I mean, when I heard Chucky describe that, Sapp went up to him and said, give me permission to call a timeout on defense late in the game because we need to, you know, our tongues are hanging out because we're chasing the quarterback. We need a break. I had never heard that before, and before I ever heard that, if I ever saw a defense call a timeout under 2 minutes, I would punch the TV. I'd be so pissed. But I just think that's so much more complicated, and there's so much going on behind the scenes than we give it credit for. So that's why I totally understand why people get pissed about quote-unquote clock management. But to me, there's too many variables to dive into.
Lee, there's just too many cooks in the kitchen in this particular instance. Enough with all this. It should be one person in charge. And that's the guy that we rely on who's on the field watching the football game, and that's Todd Bowles. He needs to make the decision of when the timeouts are used, and he needs to stop the outside noise. He needs to see momentum.
Like feel momentum, too.
Feel
yeah.
it.
I think the guy upstairs, whoever that is or person, is critical because sometimes coaches don't see things on the field.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's moving
Absolutely.
Fast. It's at eyeball level.
I live and die with
you know?
It.
Okay.
I feel like the analytics get in the way. And now we have win stats. We have next-gen winning percentage stats where you're in a third quarter and there's a 92% chance you're going to lose according to next-gen. And then if you watch the Vegas lines, the team comes back and wins. No one corrects the next-gen stat of winning. But you're making decisions based on a chance of winning statistics by somebody in your ear going, if you don't kick this field goal or if you don't go for two in this, you only have an 86% chance of winning and your odds go down if you don't kick it. Forget all of that.
Well, win percentage is bullshit anyway. It's like, you know, ESPN win percentage. Who the fuck cares?
Nobody cares.
Okay, Sean, so I thought you said the word wind at one point before. And it reminded me of, who are those guys? The Twins, the McCartneys, NFL Network one, the other CBS. They both played for Belichick. One of them was talking just last week about how good Belichick was as a coach. He was returning punts, one of these McCartney twins. He said Belichick came up to him and said, okay, the stadium we're playing in the fourth quarter, around 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the wind starts doing this. What you want to do, you're positioning yourself at this near the sideline on a punt return. He's like, what the hell is this guy talking about? Freaking wind? Really? And that's exactly what happened, what Belichick told him. How the wind would take the ball at a certain area on the field at a certain time of the day on a punt return.
Oh, yeah, it makes perfect
sense.
That's
how nuts the guy.
You know how he knew about the wind, Steve? Because when he was on the field taping the other team, practicing, he felt the wind pick up and said, I'm going to make a note to this so I can talk to my special teams about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, the camera was moving.
All right,
so, hey,
that's
great,
a good one.
Great interview with Jason Light. Happy to deliver it here to the fans at the NFL Scouting Combine right here on Radio Row. And, of course, it wouldn't happen without the great folks at Bill Curry Ford. Sean, give us 30 seconds on why we need to go shopping there this weekend.
We have a very special deal for March Madness that's coming up. I'm not ready to reveal it yet, but it's huge. It's going to be the biggest giveaway event in Bill Curry Ford's 60-year history. I'm very excited about it, but I will say that you have to come down to Bill Curry Ford to be involved in this situation for March. So
right.
If you come down and visit, test drive a vehicle, that's all you need to do. Test drive, follow us on social media, you know, Bill Curry Ford Tampa, follow us on TikTok, Instagram, and I'm not ready to reveal what
that's
it
fine.
Is
we'll
yet,
share
but
it,
it's
of course,
very
here.
Exciting stuff.
We'll
very
share it at JoeBucksFan.com. We'll
it
share
is.
It on...
I'm creating a special ad for your website.
Nice. We'll share it on X. That's exciting. Hey, the end of March is almost here.
And I just want all the listeners to realize we still do free pickup and delivery and mobile service. So we can come to your home, pick up your car, fix it, service it, bring it back, or we can send our mobile van to your work or fleet accounts. Absolutely free. Just call and set up your appointment.
Free. Right. Who does not like the word free?
You know what's funny? They don't like when I use the word free, the
Why?
Lawyers. They always like, well, free insinuates something. I said, yeah, it does.
Yeah,
it
free.
Free. That's what it's insinuating. So I do want to insinuate that
like
there is no charge for pickup and delivery and mobility.
It's kind of like...
It insinuates something.
Yeah, it insinuates...
It's kind of like the national yeah. media saying the Bucks didn't pick up Jordan Whitehead's option on a roster bonus coming up. No, they cut him. He's
yeah,
done.
He's just
he's
released.
Out, like we talked about
yeah.
earlier. All right. Again, thanks for listening to us here on the Ira Kaufman Podcast. You can catch it, JoeBucksFan.com all the time and out on the podcast platforms. And our thanks to Florida's Elite Restoration, our good friends there, Florida'sElitereStoration.com. Anytime is a good time to visit them and put them in your disaster plan. We'll see you next week, hopefully with the Sage.